Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania-based jazz and world music composer and vocalist Laura Chu Weins. We caught up with her about her new 2026 album, The Critique of Capital, an engaging review, along with how she got into the music and so much more. She grew up in a Chinese-American household and, having lived extensively overseas, is fluent in Mandarin Chinese and Spanish. She has studied and performed folk music in Chiapas, Mexico, Township Jazz in Cape Town, South Africa, Roma music in Belgrade, Serbia and Lisu minority folk music in Yunnan, China. Notably, she has also written and performed vocal music for four BBC radioed four dramas. It was never really meant to be music, but it's been a wonderful twist of fate. We get into the whole story. Enjoy this interview.
But it's great to meet you. I'm looking forward to getting into the music, getting into your world. So thank you so much for taking a minute out today.
Yeah, thank you. And can I ask you how you pronounce your last name? Is it Domino?
Domino, yes.
Okay.
And then I know that there's two names here. Like, how, what's the...
There's just Laura Chu Weins. So Chu Weins is like my last name.
Okay. Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, Laura, it's wonderful to meet you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So let's begin our journey before we get into the music and your history by asking you this. 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing the world, changing so much about what we all did. How did you get through that era, and how has it changed the way that you create and live today?
Oof, that is a big question. I mean, I think that the pandemic was an opportunity. Well, look, the pandemic was a crisis, right? Like, there were a lot of things in, I have children, I have young children. So at the time they were at home, we were trying to work. We were also wanting to make music, but the venues weren't open, which was understandable. And I think, especially as an adult, there are few opportunities to change the way that we perceive time and really and our place. You know, I think I reflect a lot on how when you are in school as a young person, like, everything felt bigger and longer, like the importance of one school year or one season in the year felt enormous, you know, like the kind of friendships you made, the memories you made, the sense that like time was endless. And as you know, you get into adulthood, it feels like just the seasons come rolling by, like the years just continue. And I think having kids at the outset slows down time again, because suddenly there's all these milestones and things happen, and they feel profound and just really make you look much, much more closely at the way that you're living your life. Look at ants on the ground, right? Like, you look at things in just a very granular way. And the pandemic, I think, did that too, right? It changed the way that we understood our landscape, where we could go, where we walked to. We were out there taking walks every day. And I think that changes the way that you create too, right? So I had been making music and writing music on my own for a long time, but I think having the opportunity to just relive that experience of appreciating anew the things that are around you and nature and kind of the, you know, singularity of every moment is really supportive in being creative.
So the Critique of Capital, it's the new album. Talk to me a little bit about what your vision was, what you were hoping with this project.
Yeah, so the album, The Critique of Capital, an engaging review. So the idea is kind of to harken back to the Jazz Age, to kind of have a cabaret sense of it, right? Like, I think the idea is that there's, it's a pretty expansive palette in terms of genres and commentary. I think it's very hard to be a person alive in this moment and not sort of register the kind of chaos and the turmoil of our politics and the our economy, you know, just the way that it's impacting our friends and neighbors. You commented earlier that, you know, we're situated here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the home of Mr. Rogers. And so we think a lot about neighborliness. And it's, we have a sort of an unneighborly climate that we're living in. So this is this album is an attempt to speak to the kind of fear, the fight, the kind of the escapism that we're some of us are experiencing or wanting to experience, and to try to a little reflect back what we're seeing and how everyday people can respond in a way that still lifts up kind values and again, not only so the Steel City is known for Mr. Rogers, but it's also known for our labor history and organizing history and like the experience of solidarity. And I wanted to have that come through in the album as well. It felt hard to do that with just one type of song or one genre, and I wanted to approach the music with some subtlety, right, too. And I'm not a huge fan of these kind of leftist dirges, the kind of plodding, very didactic music. And so trying to express our response to this political moment in this kind of varied way was my attempt at that.
Well, and I think that's a good point. I've been talking more and more about how much we're going through right now in this country that we never thought we would see. And I feel like I think about earlier generations with Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and all these other musicians that tied us together with some level of social glue so we didn't lose our way. So we understood that we're in a democracy. We understood that we're all in this together. And my question to you is this. Do you believe that artists right now are living on a more elevated level to help people feel more united and comfortable and have some level of escape because of what's going on?
I hope so, right? I mean, I take that as part of my purpose, and I think that the joy of having, I think for me it was really important that with the visuals, right? The album cover is like a bunch of friends and actually people that I do social organizing with outside of the jazz world, sort of mugging in a room together. We have a bunch of music videos of like community dance organizations that are like performing a line dance and swing dance to one of the songs. Like another neighbor's mother is a cranky artist. So she makes these actually like hand-drawn scrolls where you literally you crank it so that it's like moving in the shadow box to be an actual moving picture. And for me, like a huge part of how I understand, and that was a music video that we did for one of the songs as well. And I think for me, a huge part of this was like, how do I bring in as many real people doing real things and experiencing joy and playing together, both in the tangible instrument sense, but also like just like having a good time, as a way to not just escape from the horrors of some of our political moment, but also to showcase what it means to confront it and to resist it, and I think in particular in responding to the idea of even musicians were threatened existentially around AI and like fake music, right? Like robot music, and like I wasn't going to have in any aspect of the album something that actually didn't have real people doing real things together.
Yeah. So let's go to your beginnings. How did music become your life? How did you evolve into the jazz world? How did it all begin and take hold?
Well, so I've had a little bit of a windy journey to get here. As a young person, I was, part of choirs. I did do some basic jazz classes and was part of an ensemble in high school and college, and I did spend a lot of time overseas. I've traveled a lot. I'm the child of two Chinese moms, and actually thought I was going to be getting into community radio when I left college and spent a bunch of time overseas in order to be able to elevate other people's voices. I was really particularly interested in hearing other people's stories and giving them the tools to be able to tell those stories. And so did that in Mexico, in South Africa, in Serbia, and spent a bunch of time in China, and had the opportunity to absorb a lot of folk music, indigenous music, and something of the politics of those regions too, and how people were coming together and, fighting for a better vision of the world. So that's actually where the moniker, the name Aral Lora came from, right? Like Aral being of the ear, and sort of like the idea of listening as sort of central to how I understand myself and what I want to, how I want to be in the world. And from that, I ended up working in a casino and organizing for a union and in West Virginia. And then from that experience, ended up becoming a labor organizer. And then now run a community organizing outfit. And in that work too, in like, organizing communities, organizing workplaces, it's a lot about listening, right? And finding these common threads among different people, towards not just like what the identifying what problems are, but what is the vision that people want to see manifested, right? How can they build hope together around something that's like tangible, but also like really moves, it really elevates everybody. I had over the course of the last 2 decades been singing in jazz groups, mostly the standards and some original takes. I had also been writing my own music quietly, but sort of never figured that that would ever be brought into the world in any kind of way. But I think the pandemic, as you pointed out, was this, was a life-changing, generation-changing experience for all of us. And it was during the pandemic where I was like, no, actually, I want to hear these original songs in the world too. And I think I have something to say. So I think all of this time, I thought I was listening for other people's voices, but also I think I've been listening for my own. So that's
Wonderful.
where we are.
So, who were influences? Who were singers or bands or musicians that really swayed the way that you approached your voice?
Ooh, I mean, there's just too many. Well, so I think from an early age, I was been very interested. I do like musicals, like Broadway musicals. I think in particular, my dad infused me with a very strange set of song writer influences. So I really like the Pirates of Penzance, the Gilbert and Sullivan songs. I like the lyrical wittiness, and I like he loved Bonnie Raitt, and so I really got into her as well. But then also lots of folk music. So there's a bunch of songs that are sung in different languages, or adaptations of different indigenous or folk songs, both on this album and the previous album, Exotastes, that we released. In jazz, DeeDee Bridgewater, Karen Allison, of course, Nina Simone, and Ella Fitzgerald. I think that there are elements of lots of different artists that are fun to appropriate, or not to appropriate, but to understand. And it's hard to say how they get infused into our writing. I like Joanna Newsom. I think her lyrics are incredible. Bjork, and yeah.
So, do you remember the first live show, jazz or otherwise, that you saw that blew you away, that inspired you to eventually, whether on a conscious level or subconscious, that you were going to be on the stage one day?
Ooh, the first live show that I saw that inspired me. I think it's hard. I think that watching other musicians perform is very intimidating, right? Like, I don't think it was a linear, I don't think there's been a linear track for me watching other performers and saying, oh, I'm gonna do that. I think that instead it's been helpful to have had, I think performing just generally many times, and many times with other talented jazz musicians in our region, has actually been the thing that has allowed me to say, oh, actually I can actually perform too. But I don't think at the outset it was clear that I had the skills for it, right? Like, you have to build those. Yeah, I think maybe I think that it's actually like going out and doing it, right?
Yeah.
And failing a lot of times, and then growing confidence over time that makes you realize that you can do it.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody should watch somebody else's show and be like, oh, I can do that thing, because
Sure.
you can't do that without practice.
Yeah, sure. So, talk to me a little bit about community radio. What did you end up doing radio?
So there was yeah, so at the outset I was able to do this crazy sort of multi-location, as I mentioned, in Chiapas, Mexico, and in Cape Town, South Africa, and in Belgrade, Serbia. I did a bunch of different things with community radio. In Latin America, it was like helping to set up community radio stations. So actually like lifting towers, but then training people on the equipment and helping people talk about, or helping people gain the experience to run the machinery to
Yeah.
tell stories specifically about basically transnational politics and how that was infecting their small communities. In Cape Town, I got to work with Bush Radio, which is it's the they call it the mother of all community radio, and they also are like an incubator for youth and for jazz musicians in the Cape Town region, but also other parts of Africa to train folks to be able to start radio stations. And then I worked with B92 in Belgrade to put out a documentary on the Chinese in Belgrade, which there's an interesting history of. But yeah.
That's wonderful. So, what do you like the best about being in the music world, in the jazz community, being a musician? What do you look forward to every day?
Yeah, so jazz is so interesting. It's, I think that for some people it might feel redundant, right? Like it's like, oh yeah, those songs have already been sung. Aren't you just like a cover band, right? And I think there's a way that you can perform jazz that is that, where it's just like you're always just kind of chasing the tail of the song. You're always just kind of trying to mimic a good performance, but you're not actually owning it in any meaningful way. I think that jazz has been an awesome. I think that our my collaborator Greg Lutz likes to say that what's cool is that you're paid to do something different every time. In fact, like that audiences don't want you to like perform it, identically, the way that they have heard it previously. Like you are paid to go out and actually tell something new and have it be responsive to the particular constellation of people that are in the audience, of the particular constellation of musicians, which oftentimes, as a working jazz musician, is just like a bunch of random people that are available at any given time to play a gig. And that's exciting, is that you're in dialogue with so many different people. It's like a very present experience, and like distinct. And I think that it has taught me how to really take ownership of my own role. Like there is never like in, to rather than chasing the tail of the songs, like really you are leading it, and you can be leading it by like whispering or saying something ironic or like tracking a whole new melodic line. But it's like you have to make a decision at every moment in the performance to be like, this is mine, this is ours, and we're going to do something new, and we're going to be doing it and like really trying to connect with every person in the room.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. If you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see one jazz performance, where are you going to go? Who would you love to have seen in person?
Oof. I think I would have loved to see Miles Davis perform.
Yeah.
I'm not sure like what particular performance, but I think or Coltrane, but I think that the kinds of sounds that existed in their brains, like what they understood about music, I think we have what's captured on recorded discs, but I think that there was so much more that like surfaced in
Yeah.
their performances. So I think it would have been amazing to be in the room with them.
Yeah. I was going to say, I interviewed Mark Sherman a little while back, and he talked about going out to China and helping kind of set up some clubs and things. And apparently, there's this scene that's starting to develop. Have you heard about this?
A jazz scene in
Yeah.
China?
Yeah.
I don't know much about the jazz scene in China,
Yeah.
so I'd be interested in hearing more.
Yeah, he just said that it's taken off. There never used to be jazz, and I think he went back after a certain amount of years, and it's really starting to develop, which I'd never really heard either. So I just thought I would throw it out. I didn't know if that was anything that might have been on your radar.
I mean, I think it's cool to incorporate the kind of like sonic palettes of all these different parts of the world into jazz, right? Like there's so many different instruments that have different tunings that have such a different color to them, and to have them to have their own styles, right? Like in like appropriate jazz in their own ways. So I'm excited to hear that, and maybe I'll start. I'll look it up, and maybe the next time I'm back in China, I'll definitely check out some of those clubs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know in Japan, it's musicians are revered as gods. I mean, it's a complete staple of their auditory diet to have jazz going everywhere. So,
I love the auditory diet, right? Like everybody should be eating
yes, exactly. It should be a
some
part of
good
your
music.
healthy, yeah,
Yeah,
the
that's
eight
right.
glasses of water and then jazz,
That's
at
right.
least an album or two a day. So let's get into the crossroads of your soul right now. Everyone has a perception of you. Family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, business, but you are the one that's the driving force behind what people know and see of you. What is your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Oof, a very existential,
Yes.
philosophical question. I think one of the songs is called "She Goes for Blue," and it's a little bit of a wild journey. Maybe it feels at points like a show tune of some sort, but I one of the lyrics is that she. She's inscribing the desire path, not describing the prescribed path. It's like it's a little bit of a, I mean, it's a quite a diverse palette of songs, like with very, very, they move in narrative ways, right? Like ways that are not cyclical in a lot of the songs really end up somewhere far from where they started. And one of the other lines is that she brings the glue, right? And then she goes for blue. And I think "She Goes for Blue" is like both like, going for the blue note and like trying the thing that is maybe not, but also aspirational, right? Like reaching for the stars a little bit in the songs. And in the midst of that, like she brings the glue, like a, right? Like they're the one, I'm the one holding it together. And so I don't know if everybody would perceive this, but I think that there's, in this particular work, both my narrative, the narrative and the sort of the vision that I have is the glue that holds together what is a pretty eclectic ensemble of music, and my voice in particular, centers all of it. So I am very grateful that I have such a talented collection of musicians that are willing to go along for the ride with me.
I love it. So, The Critique of Capital, an engaging review, is the new album. It's streaming everywhere. If anyone wants a copy, or they want to download it, or they want to catch you live, any of the other good business, where do
Go
they
to my
go?
website. Yeah. So www.auralaura.com. So it's almost a palindrome, but not quite. It's AuralaLaura.com. And I'd encourage folks, we have some really fun videos, as I mentioned, and have tried to inject a visual element into songs that again span the globe, span the spectrum. So make sure you're getting a healthy dose of for your diet of all sorts
Yeah.
of types of music.
We've created a new label for the back of an album now. There's a jazz diet
That's
that.
right. I gotta think about it, but I should probably do like the food pyramid or
Yeah.
something like that as the next album
And then
cover.
jazz should be on
And
the
jazz
album.
really, will be one of next to dairy.
Absolutely. Well, it was wonderful to meet you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out today. Best of luck on the album and everything else. What a wonderful story.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate being on Neon Jazz. Joe Dimino, you've been great to talk to.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Laura for swinging on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.